Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power Your Life Radio Show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, and certified coach, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and well-being in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Welcome, everyone, and this is Dr. Joanne White, and I have two wonderful guests today that are really going to help you power your life. And I've been thinking about, what are you telling yourself? What lies are you living, if any? And are some of those beliefs that you're holding about you no longer working? Are they outdated? Do you really need to kind of re-examine why you're here, what you're doing, what your beliefs are, and really get on track with what it is you need to do with you and your life? And my first guest is going to really help us solidify that in some way. She's a colleague and a friend of mine, Teresa Moore Griffin, and she is the author of this great book that I have right in front of me right now that's called Lies That Limit, Uncover the Truth of Who You Really Are. Think about that for a moment, folks, because we're really going to delve right into that. Teresa is a certified core energetics therapist and a personal growth coach for over two decades. She's helped individuals, especially Level C executives, get beyond what keeps them stuck and stands in the way of their success and satisfaction and the ability for them to be happy and fulfilled. She uses the same lessons to help executives overcome professional obstacles, and those lessons now work to show other people, not just executives, how to be more prosperous and more purpose-centered in their lives. She's a regular guest on Fox, KYW News, and CBS, and the Comcast Network. And Teresa has contributed to numerous publications such as WorkingMother.com, SheKnows.com, Today's Child, and HealthyLiving.com. Teresa, are you there?
I am here, and it's great to be with you.
Oh, it's my pleasure always to get together with you. So this is going to be a great experience for those people who are listening, because you do have a lot to offer. But let's get to something, because I love the name of your company, and you and I, we always talk about how like-minded we are in certain ways. Why is your company called the Spirit of Purpose, Teresa?
It's kind of an unusual name for a company, no doubt about that. But the inspiration for the company name is the idea that we are all spirit and we have a purpose. And my work is about helping people connect with their spirit so that they can live from their purpose, whether it's in the corporate context or whether I'm working with a person one-on-one in my office doing coaching or core energetics. So it's really about getting closer to the truth of who you really are, which is where your genius lies, your power.
You know, I totally believe that. But oftentimes, as you know, because we both coach people, people will say, you know, I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know what I'm here to do and how I find that out. And so how do you sort of move people forward in that direction? And we'll talk a little bit about how you do that in the book. But how do you do that when you're doing your coaching?
Yeah, you know, one of the funny things is that for most people, they sort of think that their purpose will kind of descend upon them at the moment that they ask for it. And in a way, it does, because it's been with us all our lives, and most often we've been taught to ignore it and to play it down. Usually, I talk with people about remembering what it is they loved when they were a child and what they fantasized about doing and becoming, and why I think kids have a very clear sense of why they're here. And as people begin to remember some of that stuff from those earliest years of life, they often will say, you know, you're right. I really did play doctor all the time. And I wanted to go to medical school, but my parents said we couldn't afford it, or my guidance counselor said I wasn't smart enough. So it's kind of looking back, we can begin to remember what we're here to do.
Now, I think that's important. However, I also know some people, because I've taken them through that particular exercise and experiential activity too, and they'll say, I'm thinking of one particular client who said, you know, when I was young, I wanted to be a doctor, I wanted to be a scientist, I wanted to be an athlete, and this person came up with a myriad of occupations that she thought that would fit her in some way. So I think that's a great starting point, as you say, but there's more to it, as we both know. Let's focus a little bit, because not everybody knows what core energetics is about, and certainly you've trained in that. So let's give our listening audience a little bit of information. But before we do, I want to tell folks that if you would like to talk to myself, Dr. Joanne White, and Teresa Moore Griffin, the call-in number is 805-285-9790, and we welcome your phone calls. Go ahead.
All right, so, yes, I'm here. So core energetics is a process, and for me it was a life-changing process. It was developed by John Perakis, and it has in it all the components of psychotherapy and spirituality. And core really says that we are whole and pure and good and loving. And this thing called our mask and our lower self tends to cover that over, and we lose sight of who we are. They blind us to the truth of who we really are. And I write a little bit about core in the book because I think it's important for people to know about. So that's kind of a headline around what core energetics is all about.
Now, when you're studying core energetics and working with core energetics, are you involved in energy work with people?
We are involved in energy work, and we use the body as the vehicle for exploration. So people in core do a lot of physical movement and physical activity, literally to release stuck energy. Because any time that we have a thought that isn't expressed, especially if it's a chronic thought, you know, one that we've had for a long time and held on to, if it isn't expressed, it gets stuck in the body. If we have emotions that aren't expressed, they get stuck in the body. And so we use the body as a way of accessing stuck energy. And through physical movement, through vocalization, through a number of techniques like that, you can begin to move and shift your energy and free yourself up from some of those blocks. So for people, for example, who will often complain that they have headaches, so I get a headache every day at 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock, that really is stuck energy, and a process like core energetics is a great way to begin to address that energy, because there's something going on in your mind and your heart and your spirit that is getting manifested as physical pain. The energy is getting stuck and blocked, and you feel the pain as a result. Stomach ache, headache, feet hurt, all of that.
You know, I so agree with you in terms of stuck energy and also in terms of movement, Teresa. I have a background in dance and acting, and also, as you know, we're both authors, and so I know that when I can't find a word, when I'm sitting at the computer and I'm working on a manuscript, I actually get up and I move, and I sort of dance and move my, and I'm able to find information that way. And I've always thought, well, I don't think everybody else does that, but for me, because of the movement aspect, it's just very freeing, and it works.
Yes, it really does. In fact, I use what I call a three-step process, which is I encourage people to move as a way of freeing up the energy, And typically for me and for a lot of my clients, once they start moving, even if it is something as simple as stretching and twisting and turning or finding the places, you know, where you feel like, gee, that's a little sore or a little tight or I'm just not moving freely there, begin to like just stretch into those places in your body. When you finish that, your mind will be clearer.
It's so true. Even yawning, and I do this with clients too, having them yawn and make a sound with that or a sigh.
Yes.
Is a wonderful way to release energy. So let's focus a lot about this book, because folks, Lies That Limit, Uncover the Truth of Who You Are. Like I said, I'm sitting with this book. I love the cover. Teresa in red.
Thank you, Joey.
And
spoken it's, like a true friend.
And it really has a lot of information for people. So what's behind it? And what I mean by that is what was the stim to write this book? Why did you feel kind of compelled to do that? Because I think our listening audience always loves to have that information.
Yeah. And, you know, I loved coming on your show because it starts off talking about power up your life. And lies are absolutely disempowering. So any place where you're disempowered, there's a lie that's blocking you from having full access to yourself and your potential. And lies stands for labels that we believe about ourselves, illusions we hold about life and reality, excuses we make or explanations we have for why we can or can't, and the stories we tell ourselves about, you know, my family, people like us, all of that, the stuff that keeps us stuck. And as a black woman, growing up in the time and place where I did, there were a lot of lies all around me that if I had allowed them to, I would be sitting home somewhere these days, and who knows what home would be like.
Right.
Just sitting there, you know, trying to hide from life because there were so many things described as limitations for people like me. But every time I looked at one, I would think to myself, well, that's not true because there are some people like me and other people I see who are doing it. So if people can do it, I can do it. And I would step out and try whatever it was I wanted to experiment with, whether it was going to college or being on a debating team or whatever. Give it a try and not allow a lot of the external barriers that people say existed to stop me from doing what I wanted to do. And for a long time, Joanne, I have to confess, for a long time, I thought that this work of letting go of the labels, illusions, and excuses and stories that were in your way was something that black people needed to do or women needed to do. Turns out, and I learned this from working with C-suite executives, it's true for everybody. All of us, no matter how successful we are today, how happy we are with the things that we've accomplished and what we're doing with our lives, etc., all of us have places where we're stuck. And that's just a part of the human journey, the human experience. It's a universal truth that our work in life is to let go of those things that are showing up as blocks and hindering our full expression of our genius.
You know, I love that, but the hindering or full expression of our genius, Teresa, that's so very important. I believe that. I also think that our purpose here is to evolve ourselves as best we can and also send and experience love. And as you're saying, one of the ways to evolve ourselves is to really examine those labels, illusions, excuses, and stories, the lies, and to kind of move past them and shift them so that they no longer hinder us. So I have a question about the book, because you have some very interesting little experiential activities, and you talk about something that's called lies detector tools. I love that expression. Lies detector tools. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, those are tools and techniques that have helped me over time and that have helped countless clients of mine. So, for example, one of them is journaling. And the book, Lies That Limit, is actually a book with stories in it and ideas and concepts, but it's also a workbook because it contains a number of questions that people can ask themselves to help them connect with their truth and to help them identify what their baggage is and the ways that they are self-limiting and self-sabotaging. So journaling is one of the ways that you can begin to detect lies. Working with a core energetics therapist is a fast and incredible way to detect lies because the body work that's involved in core energetics, it's almost like you can, with your mouth, lie, but your body will never lie. Your body will always, you might say with your mouth, yes, but there will be some aspect of your nonverbal expression that says no. And there you kind of get into,
Go ahead. I was going to say, and when that happens, when you're lying verbally and your body is somehow receiving that information and knows that that's not the truth, that's also where pain and disorientation and the blockages, I believe, start building up because there's that disconnect between what you're saying and what your physical truth is. Am I right?
That's right. That's right. In essence, it's like the muscles constrict because we're holding down the truth.
Oh, I like that.
And when we free ourselves, our muscles relax and we have open flow, our body feels great, we feel great. People begin to say, oh my God, you look so good. What have you been doing? And you can simply say, I've been journaling my truth or I've been doing my core energetics work, because all of it makes a difference and begins to shift consciousness.
Now, you know, I have to confess something because I used to journal when I was in my 20s and maybe early 30s, but that's not something I do anymore. And I do that differently. And when I work with clients, I have people say, journaling, I don't want to journal. I don't have time to journal. And they roll their eyes. And so what do you tell people who that's not their area, that's not the way they want to self-examine? And a lot of people won't do it that way. So is there another avenue for them to work kind of by themselves that you recommend?
There are so many ways that people can work. So for folks who don't like journaling, and many people don't, especially men tend to resist it. There is meditation. There is quiet reflection. There is walking. Walking is a great way of connecting with yourself and grounding yourself. There's also, in the book, I talk about the impact of dream work and just reflecting on your dreams can give you a lot of information about what's going on at deeper levels in your psyche.
You know, I think that's so important. I do a lot of work with dreams and helping people examine and interpret their dreams. So I think that you're so right that holds a lot of truth for us. And it's not just folks about what we ate the night before or the day before or before we went to sleep, because it really, like you said, it really holds a wealth of information. I want to shift to this. I'm looking at your book. It's something that you call the pivot point. Can you talk about that a few moments, please? I think that's important for us.
Yeah, we all have them. Pivot points are those moments in your life where something happens, something large or small, but for some reason it becomes life-defining for you. It orients your thinking in a certain direction. And usually we start to say that whatever that direction is, that's the truth. So pivot points are things like, there's a story in the book of these two twin sisters who their parents are divorced when they're in their early teens. And it was a pivot point for both of them because that's a very traumatic and dramatic event. For one of them, her turn was to orient herself towards replacing her father's love and attention and affection through promiscuous activity. That's such a good turn.
Right.
And for her sister, same pivot point, same important life event, very different response to it. So for all of us, we may, in a family, for example, face the very same pivot points in terms of family circumstances, loss of money, moving from one location to another, death of a parent, etc. But our reaction to it and how it shapes our behavior and our mindset going forward can be quite different. And it's so interesting to go back and look at some of the pivot points in your own life. I do it all the time.
So I'm going to ask you if you would share, what's one of your pivot points?
One of the ones that my brother and I talk about it quite a bit is when I was 8 years old. We lived in the country in those years in South Carolina, and we're on the school bus coming home, and the kids say to me and my brother, as kids do, "Ooh, look at your house." And we looked in the field where our house was, and there was nothing there but smoke curling up from the ground. The house had burned down during the day that we were in school. And that was absolutely traumatic. I mean, I remember getting off the bus, shaking and crying. My brother, too, were hugging each other. My grandmother was there to meet us, and she's hugging us, and she's crying. It's just such an upsetting time for everyone. But that pivot point, that moment in time, reshaped my entire life. Because as sad as I was about what happened, and as scared as I was, we ended up moving to Pennsylvania. And I believe moving to Pennsylvania provided a different set of opportunities and a very different life experience for me than I would have had we stayed where we were living.
You know, that's so very, very true. And I think that for many people, their pivot point, as you're talking and I'm thinking, their pivot points can also, like you're talking about something that's so traumatic, your house burning down to the ground with just the smoke and flames. But one of the ways to look at that, and this is my mind thinking, is that you can really, from nothing, really begin to recreate or create your life anew. And so I'm not sure that was the experience or the feeling, but certainly it came about through the move and through your experiences and your life journey afterwards. So that's very important. We have a few more minutes.
And
so
I was going to say, Joanne, in the moment it didn't feel like a happy thing at all, but in the end,
no,
it was
most
a
of
very
the time,
thing for me.
Right. Most of the time it doesn't, unfortunately it doesn't, and maybe fortunately, but we find that later on. We would be remiss if we didn't define truth. We're talking about lies, but what's your definition of truth?
My definition of truth is that truth is always true, without exception. And there are very few truths in the world, because truth doesn't really change. Our awareness of it may shift and change. We may understand it better today than we did yesterday, but anything that shifts and change is not truth. It may be true in the moment, but it is not the truth. The truth to me is more like universal reality, universal truth, the ever-enduring, unchanging facts, if you will, that exist about the universe.
You know, I think that's a wonderful definition. So let's talk about how people can get a hold of you, can get a hold of this wonderful book, and find out more about what you do.
Great. So there is a four-step test for truth in the book. Lies That Limit is the name of the book, and you can find Lies That Limit at the Lies That Limit website, where I'm happy to sign and send books to you. You can also buy Lies That Limit on Amazon, and it's also available on Facebook. So it would be Facebook / Spirit of Purpose. You can find the book there, and we do a blog on Lies That Limit. If you look on the website and just go to the place in the navigation bar for blog, you can sign up for our blog, which comes out weekly, and it always has some good, helpful tips to help people let go of all the ways they disempower themselves.
That is so wonderful. So give us your website again so that people can get it. And
LiesThatLimit.com is for the book. Spirit of Purpose is for my general work in the world. And my email address is tmg@spiritofpurpose.com. Would love
wonderful.
To hear from your listeners.
Well, and I'm sure that they will get in touch with you. And so before we leave, I want to have an idea of your new direction. Is there a new direction? What's next? Because you are always moving, and movement is part of what you do with Core Energetics. So what's next for you?
What's next for me is to expand the reach and scope of Spirit of Purpose. Spirit of Purpose has done work primarily in the corporate sector, and I'd like to bring a lot of the skills and knowledge and learnings into the public domain so that more and more people can have access to the kind of quality resources, let's say, that so many executives have access to, so that we too can find ways to be more powerful in our own lives.
I love that.
So people will be hearing more and more. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's
so theme, right?
Right. Well, yeah, and I think powering our lives is what it's about. And again, it's not really about taking control over someone else's life or whatever. It's really getting a sense of your own purpose, your own feelings, and your and really kind of shaping yourself and the world. So I love what you're doing. Teresa, it's been wonderful to have you and wonderful to reconnect with you as always. And have a blessed day.
Thank you for having me. I'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thanks so much. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Folks, it's really very important to think about what we've been talking about today with Teresa in terms of lies that limit, and think about what your own truth is. And there are many ways to really figure that out in a wonderful way, certainly with some of the activities and exercises that are in Teresa's book and many other ways as well. And my next guest, who is also a colleague of mine, this must be Colleague Week, is Dr. Darlene Silvernail. She's an author, a licensed mental health counselor, and leader in the behavioral health sector of healthcare. She is someone who's teamed up with Women of PWN, Professional Women Network International, and has written a series of books on empowerment. Darlene has held numerous leadership positions in outpatient programs, residential treatment programs, counseling centers, and she has over 26 years developing and implementing quality educational programs. And through her interactions and affiliations and relationships with state agencies, professional associations, et cetera, she has a reputation for being one of the best consultants in the field. So I'd love to welcome Dr. Darlene Silvernail. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing? And you're in Florida, right?
I am in wonderful, warm, spring weather, Florida. I know. I'm very blessed.
Well, yes, you are blessed. But we've been very lucky. We are not having much of a winter, so we don't have your heat. But we certainly have some warmth. So let's really dive right into this, because we wanted to talk about positive psychology. And, you know, I think the reason I was looking at you and Teresa, because I think that it really goes together in terms of what we're going to be speaking about. So can you tell our listening audience what that's about? What is positive psychology, Darlene?
Well, as everyone is probably well aware, there's a number of wonderful articles and material out there on positive psychology. I think the first thing is to look at how people are defining positive psychology. Of course, most scientists would say that positive psychology is, again, how we as individuals achieve our own definition of happiness and satisfaction in order to feel stimulated, have our passion, and, of course, have a sense of well-being. I always tell people that each person defines that differently, of course. But did you know that Dr. Martin Seligman, who is the one of the leading factors in learned helplessness and a number of other concepts as it relates to positive psychology, he teaches a class at Harvard University on happiness. Just think about going to school and taking a course and getting college credits on just the subject happiness.
You know, I love it because I think that that's so essential. I'm almost done with my book on joy, and I think that most people walk around, and this isn't a way to be disconcerting about them or to dismiss them in any way, but most people walk around not really connecting with that inner joy or that sense of happiness. They kind of do what they have to do, and so that's missing. I think that's missing more so now than perhaps in the past.
Absolutely. And, you know, our future begins today. I always say, if I'm stuck in yesterday or I'm projecting all over tomorrow, today is not going to be very fulfilling for me. I'm going to miss my opportunities. So I always encourage people to develop, and I hope that as we're talking today, Dr. White, that people will look at and be encouraged to develop a self-enhancement plan for themselves and a plan that's, you know, realistic, defining their own happiness. What does happiness mean to them? What does well-being mean to them? Because sometimes people get stuck, and they get stuck as a result of fear. One of the things that positive psychology focuses on is theories such as approach motivation versus avoidance motivation. And what I mean by that is we are more likely to approach a goal, idea, if we feel that we have some control of the outcome. In other words, if I feel that I have the skills necessary to acquire and accomplish that task, I'm going to jump right in it. But most people, if they're afraid or they're fearful or they have those negative self-talk encoded in our hippocampus, and our hippocampus is part of our limbic system that stores good memory, good feelings, bad feelings, and that faulty thinking that pops up and tells us, oh, you can't do that, so don't bother. So avoidance motivation kicks in, and sometimes people will avoid certain tasks that if they were to attempt it, even if they fall down and make a mistake, get back up and try again, they'll develop confidence, self-esteem, self-efficacy skills that will help them walk through future tasks and look at what previously had been described as obstacles, but look at them as opportunities.
And you know, I think that's so very, very important. I want to get back to something because I think that this is something that the listening audience, Dr. Silvernail, can really use. And you had mentioned a self-enhancement plan. Now, who doesn't need a self-enhancement plan? I think that's something that everybody can really benefit from. So if somebody were to sit down, let's say, after the show and come up and create a self-enhancement plan, what is it they need to include in that would help them and guide them towards feeling better about themselves, towards achieving more happiness, reaching their goals?
Well, one of the things that I would suggest is that they first, again, ask themselves, what is it that I truly want to accomplish? You know, is well-being or happiness to them more physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual, relationship? You know, what drives their definition of happiness? And then make a list of just a couple, not too many, but just a couple goals that you want to work on. Let's say somebody's, I don't know, type A personality, and they're putting too much on their plate, and they're so driven, and all they want is a sense of inner peace, some quiet time, a little more time with friends and family, then those goals should be targeted measurably and with objectives, little baby steps that will help you reach those goals.
So
and another technique. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Talk about another technique, and then I'll intervene.
I apologize. I get so passionate about this subject.
Well, this is a very passionate subject, and you are one of the experts in your field, so it's understandable. But what's another goal for the self-enhancement?
Well, the other thing, too, is if we look at, for instance, and it's called appreciative inquiry techniques, looking at the positive. So often we look at what we don't have rather than looking at what we do have. So when we're developing this self-enhancement plan, we should look at our resources, our support systems, and the good things, the positive things in our life, so that each day maybe write down three things that you do enjoy so that you can continue to enjoy those things while you're working on your other self-enhancement plan. So don't deprive yourself of what's working. Build off of that.
You know, that's so very, very vital, and I want to just stay with that for a little bit, because so many people really focus on what's not working in their lives, and some days I even do that, and I think I'm one of the most optimistic people alive, but every once in a while that kind of trips me up. But I think that you have something with that, because I think that it's so very, very important to recognize the gifts, large or small, that we really have in our lives. And you know why that's coming true so strongly for me this week and last week? I work with several clients who have terminal diseases and rare diseases and whatever, and yet they are my true heroes. They are living their lives, Dr. Silvernail, with passion and dedication and working with other people, and they're doing so without, I mean, yet while they're still going through their own life and death challenge on a daily basis, which most of us don't really have to do. And so when we look at, you know, we've got to put it all in perspective, because weekly I am bombarded with these people whom I cherish so much because of what they're teaching me, and yet here we are, we complain about, oh, look at it, it's see where we are today, Darlene, it's cloudy, look at it, it's cloudy, all I want to do is stay in bed, rather than really going into what you've been describing in terms of appreciating what we have.
And it's true. And asking ourselves those questions, it's going to foster awareness. In other words, you know, what is it about this day that I can really embrace? You know, who have I not called recently that I need to connect with or reconnect? And again, asking ourselves what actions and attitudes that will make me happier. What can I do to make myself happier and to bring, you know, more happiness into my life? I have to ask myself, Margaret Thatcher has this quote. I wish I could write down all her quotes. She says, you know, there's people who do, who talk, and then there's people who do. You know, it's easy for me to say, oh, I should do this or I ought to be, but when I do should and oughts, I am doing what? I'm crapping all over my day. So I need to focus on I am able, I will do, and going back to the appreciative inquiry techniques, using positive words, changing my language so that I change that faulty thinking, so that I'm empowering myself to embrace this. Because happiness is not an end state, but it's rather something that I work on my entire life. And it doesn't mean that I'm never going to get there. It just means that I want to maintain some level of happiness and joy.
And it's a journey. It's a continuous journey, as you're saying. It's something that we do throughout our lives. And at the same time, it's something to really acknowledge, just like you're talking, on a daily basis and maybe even on an hourly basis. I'm fortunate to be talking with you, Dr. Darlene Silvernail, talking about positive psychology, and the call-in number for anybody who would like to speak to my guest and or myself is 805-285-9790, and just give us a call. Now, you, let's talk a little bit about you, because you also are an author, and I want to hear a little bit about some of the books that you've been working on and actually completed on that empowerment series. And so let's delve there a little bit.
Well, if you of course you probably remember that we did the handbook guide for baby boomers, our baby boomers. And
right.
Then we did and that was just kind of a fun book that just talked about gender bender and social cultural factors that influence how we think that we need to behave and act based on encoded beliefs society-wise. And then we did one, Emotional Wellness for Women. And I believe in that particular book, because I don't have it right in front of me, there are several. I did one on understanding and recognizing signs of abuse. And I talked about the domestic violence issues and the public health issues and recognizing abuse without being shame-based. And how
do you work a lot with women or families of abuse?
Yes, I do.
And how do you help these? Is it primarily women?
I'm one of the state trainers in the state of Florida to train agencies that provide services for not only the batterer but for the victims. So I've been involved in state standards since, really the 80s or probably even the 70s. But as a provider, I provide services to both. And then we did a...
I have a question that's just coming up, so, and then you can go back to that. In terms of working with people who've been abused and the victims and the families, and also teaching that at a state level with the agencies, how do you help them look at a positive psychology when... particularly the so-called victims, when they've been victimized, when they've had to awaken to physical and or emotional sexual abuse, how do they get to see the positive aspects of their lives?
That's an excellent question, and we do. We use positive motivation all the time. For instance, I mentioned earlier Martin Seligman, who, again, he wrote the book on learned optimism, and he done a lot of work, as well as an old theorist, Albert Bandura, where we talked about learned helplessness. So victims, not all victims, but victims of domestic violence have a higher rate of going into what we call learned helplessness. If I do this, I get yelled at. If I do this, I get yelled at. If I don't put the right clothing on, I get name-called. I had this psychological abuse, this emotional abuse, and often, not always, but often physical abuse. So they get to the point where they just get, I'm afraid to do anything, so therefore I just won't do. And that's called learned helplessness. So what we do is we try to help them work through that safely and do safety plans. But also where I was talking about approach motivation and avoidance motivation, sometimes people who don't understand victimology will see they're not working on certain goals. A provider may say, well, they're not motivated. No. It's not about motivation. It's about fear. It's about coping mechanisms that, in their case, they feel is going to keep them safe or avoid the stress because, again, that area of the brain is that's their way of dealing with the stress and coping mechanisms. So we have to understand that when we work with this particular population.
So what are some coping mechanisms? Because I think that coping techniques, coping mechanisms can really be utilized across the board, not just for people who've been victimized or bullied, but also for other individuals. So can you give us a couple of examples of good coping mechanisms?
Okay. Good coping mechanisms, not examples of what victims would demonstrate.
Right. Healthy ones.
Okay. All right. So examples of good coping mechanisms is, for instance, identifying what stresses you. For the first, if you can identify the stressors, then again, going back to our self-enhancement plan, we can develop skills that will help us walk through some of these stressors in a more productive way. Because sometimes you can't avoid all stress, but if you identify how the stress is affecting you and then develop healthier coping mechanisms, for instance, if you've conditioned yourself to have an extra drink or two in order to relax rather than maybe taking a walk or picking up the phone and calling a support. So, again, some of these coping skills may have been previously learned or behaviorally observed, so it's observational learning, and we have to then teach other options, look at other options, so that, again, individuals can set goals that they feel that will increase their self-efficacy about, again, attaining their outcome. So if my goal is, again, to be able to walk through the stress without, I don't know, being a rageaholic or without isolating in my room and sleeping half the day away because I want to avoid the stress, I can look at what my other options are, as scary as they may be, reach out. Remember we talked about those positive things that we have in our life. So maybe I do have people that are willing to help me, but I've got to first learn to let somebody in and let them know that I need help.
You know, that's really very important, because oftentimes, and I don't think this is just victims of abuse, Darlene. I think it's many of us. Oftentimes when something sad or something difficult happens in our lives, there are many people who don't reach out, who don't find that there's somebody that they can talk to. And it's not necessarily a professional. It could be a friend or a family member, somebody who cares and who listens. And I think that's so very essential. Let's talk a little. Let's switch gears, because I want to talk a little bit about you. And what got you involved in this field? You've been doing a lot of this positive psychology and working with these agencies and really helping people in mental health. And what really called you to this?
I came into this particular area through law enforcement. Many years ago, I was in the military and then entered law enforcement. And after a number of years of placing people in the back of my cruiser and wondering why? And I always questioned, why do certain behaviors continue despite the negative consequences? And one life event led me, unfortunately, one of the things was I was chasing a murder suspect and fell through a second floor building. I was undercover for a number of years.
I had a
second floor building, abandoned building stairwell collapsed on me. So I had some reconstructive surgery. I'm fine today, but back then it allowed me a long recovery period to kind of evaluate some things in my life. So I decided that I was going to go back to school and enter our industry, psychology. And what I did was while I was going to school, of course, I worked for the medical examiner's office for a while. And between the forensics aspect of psychology, working in the military in the operating room, and, you know, my legal stuff, I said, how can I combine all this? And so I went into forensic psychology before I went into organizational IOP psychology. I spent years in the forensic area. And after getting my PhD, of course, I've assisted a number of alternative sentencing programs. So I've worked for state and government entities establishing alternatives to help people who may have had an intervention change their life. So again, motivation is key in order to help empower people to evaluate what motivates them. You know, what creates change.
It's so wonderful to hear your evolution in terms of what you were doing with being in law enforcement and having that sort of that shake-up call, I'll call it, to have that time you didn't have a choice to really reevaluate and really see other opportunities to help people before they became incarcerated, so to help people along their journey into a more positive reality, a more positive future. We only have another minute or so. Would you tell folks how they can get in touch with you and maybe see and connect with you and find out more of what you do?
Absolutely, and thank you. And, of course, we could have went on for hours, and I thank you for having me on the show. If anyone would like to get in touch with me, they could, of course, go to www.silvernailconsultantservices.com, and you can also just Google my name, Darlene Silvernail, and it pops up, of course, in the Internet to these days. But, again, www.silvernailconsultantservices.com, and we are located in West Palm Beach, Florida.
And I'm going to call you Darlene because we're colleagues and friends. It's been a pleasure, as always, to connect with you and certainly for you to share so much of your information and your passion with our listening audience. I wish you a blessed day and a sunny day because you're already having a sunny day in Florida. And thanks so much for being a great guest.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me. Have
my
a wonderful
pleasure.
Day.
Thanks. Bye-bye. So, folks, we've been talking so much about positive psychology and living on purpose and living with your truth. And this reminds me of something that I've written in my book, Sense Your Way to Life Satisfaction, about your passions and identifying your passions and living your passions. So I'm just going to read you a little tiny excerpt, and really share that with you. And it's called Passionate Living. What does it mean to live passionately? It means living with a sense of excitement, with the feeling that life has meaning and color, purpose and joy. Passion gives us the energy and the gusto to create and dream, even when we walk through times of turmoil and difficulty. And in those challenging moments, remember to keep steadfast on your goal and your vision, and remember why you're passionate. So I want to share with you what I'm passionate about, and that's like the guest that I'm having this week and next week. I really, really spend a lot of time choosing great guests that I think will help you on your journey to power your life and that will help other people in the world, because I think we're all so very connected. And so next week we're devoting a whole show to breast cancer and to helping women and their families, women with breast cancer. And Susan Hunter, who has this wonderful website, forwholeness.com, which really has a really complete breast cancer community, forwholeness4.com, and she's going to be talking about connecting people. And then we have another very powerful woman who is a breast cancer survivor, and she's going to be on the show along with Susan, and she is Joan McDevitt, and she's going to talk about, she's also a licensed pharmacist and a yoga teacher practitioner, and she's going to talk about her journey. So again, I think it's very special for all of us to remember that many of us have so many challenges, and yet to me, the blessing for all of us, because I think even those people teach us so much, the blessing is to live through those challenges, recognize what they're teaching us and how we can move past them. Sometimes we certainly can't get rid of terminal illness, and sometimes we can find ways for a cure and find ways to move past that with resilience. But I think the life is a discovery. It's a discovery of who we are. It's a discovery, as Teresa said, about removing those lies that limit who you are, that limit your abundant wealth and truth and personal power, professional power. and as Dr. Silvernail said, to really do so in a way that really shows you what the good side, the positive side, the upbeat side of your life is. Not everything has to be woe and dismal. And so before I move on, what I want everybody to do is just to take a moment. And here we're on the East Coast, and so it's almost 1 o'clock. So wherever you are in the world and wherever you are, just take a moment and think about the last couple of days. There needs to be something that you are feeling good about, something that's taught you maybe to move forward, some special gift, maybe a child's laughter, something very special in an opportunity, maybe with a client, or something that happened today, large or small, that really changed your perspective, your view, that really allowed you to feel better about yourself and better about your life. This is Dr. Joanne White, and for many of my books, and I have this new book that just came out that I'm really excited about, Mastering the Art of Success. And who doesn't want to be successful? Most of us do. And this book represents many ways and many authors, leaders, and educators and coaches and professionals who really give you their example and their way of examining your success and moving past any limitations so that you can achieve and master your own success. So go to docwhite.org, and you can find a lot of products, a lot of free articles, and a lot of information, and certainly that Mastering the Art of Success book. And I hope you will join us next week, Wednesday, February 15th, for Breast Cancer Show. And afterwards, the week after, we're going to devote a whole show. Yes, it's not the 14th, but since this is the month of love, a whole show to just that, to love and relationships, and we're going to have a great time. So wherever you are, take that moment to really feel good about yourself. Identify one area in your life, even one small snippet, that's making a difference in your life and your day. This is Dr. Joanne White, and thank you so much for being a part of my life. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with your host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the upbeat show to grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again by visiting divatoolbox.com and blogtalkradio.com. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.